morning and welcome to First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf. That's the Hall of Famer Chris Carter.
Good morning, bro.
This is Nick Wright. We are in a very good mood after a wonderfully quiet weekend, but a great weekend here in New York City. Everyone,
it's gorgeous.
In a good place this morning?
Absolutely. One of the prettiest weekends of the year.
We had a nice one. Yeah, we are winding down the summer, but big weekend in the NFL to talk about. And the regular season hasn't even begun yet. Cowboys might have found a replacement for Zeke. But first, Vikings, Saints, check out this nice catch from Adam Thielen.
Oh, nice little adjustment there.
And picks up right where he left off the last two seasons. If you had to pick one of these receivers, who you get? Thielen, Diggs. Who you got, Nick?
Diggs.
I'm glad you had time to think about it.
I should have known. You're a law firm.
Niners and Cowboys. Debo Samuel with a spectacular.
Don't you guys have affirmative action over there?
Spectacular catch over the defender in his NFL debut.
Oh, look at that.
A lot of good catches this week. A lot of young receivers, man.
And the Niners, I'm starting to interrupt, are going to be relying on this guy.
Oh, yeah. They need him to be big.
They need him to be really good. They don't have big
Nick asked me to come out of retirement and play for them next year.
All right, to the CFL. Winnipeg Blue Bombers, Marcus Sales, up he was high beat. For the IMC.
Quarterback underthrows it. He finally gets back in coverage and snatches it. One, give me that. Typically, defensive backs not known for their hands. But check out the vertical. Nice timing.
It's a great pick. That's a terrible pass by that quarterback.
He's throwing off his back foot. That's why he's in the CFL.
You got all that extra room in the back of the end zone, man. Lead him.
Yeah, if he knew what he was doing, he'd be down here.
Here we go. Wagner football practice.
Whiteout
Joshua DeCamry with a remarkable one-handed catch.
Go ahead, Wagner.
That's fantastic.
That was nice.
That was spectacular there. Backhanded it one hand on his head. I like it.
That's our practice catch of the offseason so far.
All right, to the Cowboys now. Ezekiel Elliott still holding out and no end in sight to the stalled negotiations, Dallas has started to look at life beyond Zeke. But how do you replace the productivity of arguably the best back in the league?
You don't.
How about rookie fourth-round pick out of Memphis, Tony Pollard? Sure, he had just 16 yards on four carries in his debut on Saturday, but that doesn't have Jerry Jones the least bit concerned.
He looks confident out there. We know he's inordinately understanding what it is he does and can do. And we've seen him do it. We know he's capable of, if he really needs to, carry the whole load.
All right, CeCe, is Jerry Jones sending a message to Zeke? All right, we got Alfred Morris, we got Tony Pollard, we got Mike Weber. We're good. We don't need you. Is this a message from Jerry Jones?
Well, he sent the message earlier. That's why Zeke went off to Mexico. When he told him, no, I can't afford to pay you that. And Zeke, the contract offer that the Cowboys offered him, they were so embarrassed with, they haven't even come back with the counter offer. So I think that there has been a message sent. I don't think having these press conferences daily is trying to send a message to Zeke. I think it's more trying to encourage the other players the way Jerry has done. As if I'm a player and I've replaced one of their star players, and then now Jerry is not addressing me out there because the staff has said he's had an outstanding camp, but he's not Ezekiel Elliott. But as a running back, you have to be careful because they find running backs anywhere. Undrafted, drafted low, high drafted, but they're more likely you can be replaced, your productivity, some of it, by anybody at running back, more so than any other position. The reason why is running back skills, they're natural, they're God-given, their vision, their ability to cut, read the holes. And there's not too much difference in the running plays from high school, college, to the pros. So if a kid has vision, a kid can explode, a kid hasn't been discovered, in the NFL, they have found a niche of being able to find these running backs by, I don't know how they find them, but they get running backs from colleges you wouldn't expect to produce running backs. So can a running back be replaced? Ezekiel Elliott can't be replaced because he is not your ordinary running back. But I would just be careful because if your demands are too high, what they have to do moving forward from a salary cap standpoint, I believe they're willing to move forward just a little bit so that Zeke, until Zeke flinches, because Dallas cannot afford to reset the market with Ezekiel Elliott.
Well, so if they are going to put pressure on Zeke, it's not going to be because of what Tony Pollard does. Like, Tony Pollard might one day be a very good NFL running back, but you're going to have to see that in regular season games over an extended sample before anyone believes it. This is a guy who had 139 carries in his entire collegiate career. That's about 5 games for Ezekiel Elliott, 6 games maybe for Zeke.
So that's, like that.
And so the idea that the Cowboys just say, oh, we don't have Zeke, we're just going to go with Tony Pollard, Mike Weber, and Alfred Morris, it would be an obvious downgrade, even if Pollard is one of these diamonds in the rough, one of these guys that you find, you're like, wait, from the University of Memphis, this is what he did? For the Cowboys and Zeke, though, here is the conflict. Because Chris is absolutely right that you can find league average or slightly above average running backs almost anywhere. So you are paying for the difference between 75% of the production Zeke gives you and 100%. Because you can get 75% of the production he gives you for probably $2 million a year. You can get that off the waiver wire or trading a sixth round pick. You can find that. Duke Johnson was just available. I understand he's more of a pass catcher than a runner, but guys like that. So how much is that special part worth? Because while the running backs that are league average, you can find them anywhere, there's only a handful. There might be fewer great running backs than almost any other position. You just mentioned Adam Thielen. He's an outstanding wide receiver, but there's probably 7 or 8 guys better than him. We talk about pass rushers. DeMarcus Lawrence just got paid top of the market money. You could probably, Khalil Mack, Aaron Donald, J.J. Watt. You go down the list, so there might be 7 or 8 pass rushers better than him. Running backs, there's 3 or 4 really great ones. So what is Zeke's one of those? What is the greatness worth to you as opposed to just plug and play someone else? That's what they're haggling over because you're really paying $12 to $14 million a year just for that spread of the 75% production to that top 100%.
Because this is the quintessential definition of force multiplier. There are many running backs out there, but here's a guy who makes your quarterback better, helps your line, who helps the whole offense run. That's when Eric Mangini comes on and talks about a guy who actually makes the whole team better, everyone around him. Is that the case that Ezekiel Elliott is one of those guys?
He really is. I mean, you put him in a very special category. I like the way you explained it because we have devalued running backs over the course of NFL history. But as you can see, if you are special, if you are Le'Veon Bell, yes, you will make the offensive line better. You will make the wide receivers better. If you're Todd Gurley and you're healthy, yes, but those are the only handful of backs that we do have. Nick makes a great point. If you look at the other positions, man, you go to wide receiver, there is a bunch of them. If you look at defensive ends, there's a bunch of them. Cornerbacks, there's not as many. There's not as many, and that's the reason why the price.
Yep.
It's hard to drive up the price because you don't have guys being drafted, and then their contracts are escalating you so that you can get that high asking price that they're looking for.
And with corners, it's hard to find just the league average one. What I think's happened with running back, and it's distorted the conversation a bit, is because league average is so easy to find, we act like great is also easy to find. You can, if you are a team that just has a league average running back and he goes down with an injury, you're probably fine because you can just, whoever next man up is can probably do that. But if you're one of the few teams that has a great one, how much he makes your quarterback, your offensive line, your receivers better?
A league-wide throwing the ball 65% of the time. Yep. So regardless of how many good backs you have, the system have changed where they are throwing the ball so much more. So that in itself has devalued the running back. But if you are special, you deserve to get paid. All those other ones, L. Bell, Todd Gurley, both of them are paid. Zeke wants to be paid next.
Well, that leads us to our next question. Is Zeke actually the least of the Cowboys' worries at this point? We'll tell you why we're asking next on First Things First.
Hey, it's Nick Wright, and hiring is challenging, but there's one place you can go where hiring is simple, fast, and smart, a place where growing businesses connect to qualified candidates. That place is, of course, ZipRecruiter.com/approach. ZipRecruiter sends your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards, but they don't stop there. With their powerful matching technology, ZipRecruiter scans thousands of resumes to find people with the right experience and invites them to apply to your job. As applications come in, ZipRecruiter analyzes each one and spotlights the top candidates so you never miss a great match. And right now, our listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free at this exclusive web address, ziprecruiter.com/approach. That's ziprecruiter.com/approach. ziprecruiter.com/approach. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
Time for us to go viral. CeCe, Nick, you both lived in Los Angeles. Yep. Seen how bad traffic can be in Southern California. So does this guy. Check him out. Got out of his car, trying to pass the time, dribbling the ball. Wait, is that normal for it to just be at a standstill?
Oh, yeah.
Like that?
He's stuck on the 405, but ball just is life, man. Got to get out there and get some run in.
I respect it. I respect it. Now, this kid right here, I'm sure he's playing for free. Ben Simmons, we can't get him to practice. He's making millions and millions of dollars. Kid stuck on the 405. Let me get it in. I need to get better.
It's
Ben Simmons,
first
Nick
first
Wright,
bingo card don't need America.
To, don't need to practice. Don't need to get
that's
any
where
better.
You were going.
My range right now is 3 feet and don't want to expand that.
Stuck on the 405.
Working
stuck
on my
like
handle.
That?
Yeah.
Working on my handle.
Listen, LA is awesome. But the traffic, folks ain't lying about it. It's bad. But
they
it
have
gets
to do what they do in China, where they do every odd and even days of when your license plates ends in an odd and even number when you could drive.
Prefer kind of more democratic freedoms, but that's fine.
Okay. Well, it was just a thought. Time for stories to start your morning, sponsored by Gillette Clear Gel. Anthony Davis expected to resign with the Lakers in 2020, but according to reports, his agent, Rich Paul, said AD could join the Knicks if the Lakers implode this year. Nick, is this a real possibility?
Man, I just love this little cottage industry of people that have decided that Rich Paul actually makes all of Anthony Davis's decisions for him. I'm old enough to remember that Rich Paul was forcing AD to go to the Lakers to help LeBron. Now he ain't played a game yet. He's already leaving. I said this before, I will say it again. I would bet all of the money I have in the world, plus Jenna and Chris's money, that Anthony Davis is on the Los Angeles Lakers for a minimum of the next 3 years. Now, past that, I don't know. But no, he's not going to be one and done with the Lakers no matter how this season goes.
The reason why I don't believe this is because I know that Rich Paul had to tell the Knicks, don't trade for us because we're not going to sign an extension. If he told the Knicks he wasn't going to sign an extension and come there through a trade, even though the Knicks didn't have the best spot, but if they had gotten the number one pick, they would have been in the running. So why would now that change? I believe he's very, very comfortable. I mean, this Rich Paul stuff, I mean, it's like once a week. Once Rich Paul, let's see what we can do. Let's see what we can create.
It's almost like there's people that talk to members of the media that have an anti-Rich Paul agenda. It's crazy.
That's nuts. Moving on to some football now.
This is pretty.
Patrick Mahomes was perfect in his preseason debut Saturday against the Bengals, completing all four of his passes, 66 yards. Nick, how did the reigning MVP look to you?
Get down, man. Oh, my goodness. That first pass we saw, just a little flick of the wrist, 35 yards to Travis Kelce right here. I mean, he looked like he looked last year. Mm-hmm. And see, you pointed out something before the show about the different arm angles or his almost different throwing mechanics depending on the
Every
throw.
One of his throws was totally different. One time he got it out quick. One time he put a little arc on it. DB didn't know where it was. We forget what a great athlete he is. Dual sport baseball player. Yes, this is what the best doing it at his highest level, and it's only going to get better. They added another weapon to him. Andy Reid, seeing him in his third season, second as a full starter. I expect this Kansas City team to be dangerous. They should be the favorite in the AFC based on Patty Mahomes.
All right, moving on. Steelers' second-year wideout James Washington had a stellar preseason debut on Friday, hauling in four catches for 84 yards and a touchdown against the Bucs. CeCe, how much can Washington help the Steelers' offense this season?
He can really help them because not only does he provide a reliable route runner, he's good after the catch, outstanding player in college. They drafted him last year in the second round. One thing I would be concerned about was the tragedy. Their wide receiver coach died this weekend suddenly. When you have a good wide receiver coach who has a great relationship with these young players, Juju Smith-Schuster, only his second year in the league, he had that relationship because he's only been there 2 years. Now Washington, I believe he is ready. He is ready to make that next step to be the number two for the Pittsburgh Steelers. But I want to watch who they're going to bring in there as a wide receiver coach. It's a very, very unsettling situation for young guys to lose their position coach.
Absolutely. Incredibly sad for him and his family, obviously. And we also saw, unfortunately, a similar situation in Minnesota last year. Right before the season, their offensive line
coach
Tony Sperano passes away. And they seemed to be reeling from that throughout the season.
Never recovered.
And so, obviously, there are bigger things at play than James Washington and how the Steelers progress, but that is a part of it. On him individually, he was extraordinarily productive at Oklahoma State, was not great last year. They need him to take a big leap this season.
All right, let's move on to Antonio Brown now. After his tumultuous relationship with Ben Roethlisberger and the Steelers came to a close, many thought a fresh start with the Raiders would clear the air. But with AB dealing with frostbitten feet and now threatening to retire if he can't wear his old helmet, Mr. Big Chess might have been the culprit all along. See, does AB's recent behavior give you a little more clarity on his relationship with Big Ben? Now that you look back, you still feel, was it more Big Ben or more AB?
Well, this is the thing, Jenna. I know AB, and I know the league, and I know too many coaches, I know too many players, and I know behind the scenes. That's what I said this weekend. Mike Tomlin was a big winner. Ben Roethlisberger. Now, Ben played a part. Ben has his own little issues. But Antonio Brown, out of all the characters in Pittsburgh, he should receive more of the blame than anyone's. And I'm not surprised. I thought Pittsburgh, even though they do run their family business, as Coach Mangini says it, a little bit different, it's not a place where you can just go crazy. In Oakland, oh, yeah, that's where players go. If you want to act a fool, go to Oakland. That's always been in the 70s, in the 80s, and now they're continuing that by trading and rewarding. So, for me, this is just the beginning of what AB will do, because I don't believe he's going to deal with losing a lot of games, not being in prime time well. So, yes, this is just a sign of things to come.
So, I think a lot of people have made the point Chris made, and I think it's a smart one, which is a little vindication for the Steelers and for Big Ben and for Mike Tomlin. And anyone that watches this show knows I'm a big Mike Tomlin fan. And while I understand that the vindication part of this, as much as I like Tomlin, I also wonder if Mike Tomlin also was part of the problem that led to this, in as much as this. When's the last time Antonio Brown was told no? You want to stay somewhere else at training camp. You want to have special rules. You want to have special dispensation about when you get here, when you leave.
Well, those type of things go on every NFL team, except New England.
Oh, sure, absolutely. But it feels like Antonio Brown continued to push the envelope, and Mike Tomlin himself said, we're going to deal with it as long as his production warrants
it. Or even how much he was penalized for the Facebook stuff, for the throwing.
Exactly right. And I totally understand the rationale there. And like I said, I like Mike Tomlin a lot. But what it seems like is going on right now is, for the first time in a very long time, Antonio Brown is being told no. No, you cannot wear your old helmet. There is no negotiation. There is no way around it. The answer is no. And he hadn't heard no in a very long time and is not dealing with it well. And so I think that you don't just out of nowhere become that. You start building towards that, because Antonio Brown, it's not like he was always, when he was at Central Michigan, was this guy. He has become this player with more success and more money and more fame and more power, and that all obviously happened within the Steelers organization. Right. Now, I still don't think the Steelers are a better football team without him. I think that as an organization, they will be quieter, they will be a more relaxed, they will be a calmer football team. I still think that talent is almost impossible to replace. But yeah, I mean, I'm sure Big Ben right now feels like, man, I told you guys it wasn't me, even if partially it was.
We just assume that Pittsburgh, you know, different families do different things differently. Mm-hmm. But now that you have all these things you've seen about Antonio Brown, at what point does that become a cancer in the locker room? At what point do the other players say, enough? We need the practice. We need to get on the same page at some point. When does it become a distraction, or does it not? Does everyone stay in their own lane?
No, you got 32 locker rooms, but every guy's in business for himself. And a guy, if I'm on the team, I'm a defensive player, I'm going to make sure that I can keep making my money and take care of my family. I'm not going to jump out and do something that the organization, what if they support him again? If you're a defender on that team and you say something to AB, John Gruden just said, I support AB against the NFL. I support him against the Players Association. You think that player is going to feel like he's going to support you if you say something to AB? So, no. You got 32 teams. You got 32 different locker rooms. And all of them aren't good. There are a bunch of teams that are not trying to win. They are playing football and making money. And that's it. There are no playoff aspirations. When you have an environment like this, you're not cultivating winning. No, absolutely not. So every person right there is being selfish and trying to take care of their own business and trying not to get caught up into messing up their career or altering their future with the Raiders.
And right now, I know it does seem like, or it feels like, the Steelers made the right decision here. We were just at the beginning of this segment talking about Anthony Davis. And when that trade happened, I think we both said, man, this is one of those trades where it's a win-win for both sides. New Orleans got exactly what it needed. The Lakers got exactly what they needed. I fear with this one, both sides are going to feel like at the end of it, it was a lose-lose.
A little lose-lose.
That the Steelers, with a window with Big Ben entering year 16, lose that much talent. The Raiders bring in a guy who all of a sudden is going to be.
There is no way that the Pittsburgh Steelers, when they seen the news that's coming out saying, you know something, this is why team sports is great. Because team sports is the only place that you can take less talent and say, you know something, we're better off. You cannot have that type of influence on all these young receivers. Juju Smith-Schuster, his career needs a chance. James Washington, his career needs a chance. And if you have that guy continuing just to build on these things year after year after year, no. That's why in team sports, guys say, you know something? He's gone, but we're better off. That's how they can be, because all of them now feel like, man, we're all moving in the same direction. We all have the same goals. Your career is just as important as mine. And obviously, they did not have that with AB in the Pittsburgh Steelers locker room.
All right, that's the drama in Oakland. The drama in Dallas is this. The Cowboys now and the big three looking for big money deals. Ezekiel Elliott, Amari Cooper, Dak Prescott. We assumed Dak would be the quickest to get done. After all, Jerry Jones all but said so himself. But Dak has reportedly turned down a contract extension worth $30 million per year, which would have made him the sixth highest paid quarterback in the league. CeCe, you surprised Dak turned down this deal?
Not surprised at all. If you look at where the market's going and I think that the only people that will have a problem with Dak in this number that are people just looking at, wow, is that quarterback worth that number? But if you look at the salary cap, it's close to $180 million. You better adjust your eye and get used to this. Right now, I think we have six guys, one, two, three, four, five, six, that are making 30 or more million dollars. And it's only going to get, you're going to have 10 in the next year and a half. You're going to have 15 in the next 2 years. All guys making 30 plus million. It's the economics of it. The game has been very, very profitable, not only for the owners, but for the players. And you're going to have to start, what is $25 million? What is $30 million? Does it get you something? Well, Matthew Stafford's getting $27 million. Jimmy Garoppolo has done absolutely nothing. He went out on a date with a woman that's a celebrity. Mm-hmm. He's getting $27.5 million. Kirk Cousins getting $28 million guaranteed. What's he done in the league besides have very good regular seasons throwing the ball? Yep. He has not won. So, yes, this is how it goes.
But
Dak Prescott will be the next one, and I'm not surprised that he turned down more than 30 million.
See, those three examples, though, to me, are the examples that prove the case as to why for the Cowboys, paying Dak Prescott $30 million is really, really risky. And Dak turning it down, to me, is, unless the guarantees were all fake, is he has overstated what his true market is. What do all three of those teams have in common? The Lions with Stafford, the Vikings with, since they got Kirk Cousins, and the Niners with Garoppolo. Those haven't been good teams. You mentioned six guys are making 30-plus million. If I have them right, Russell Wilson's been to two Super Bowls. Brady's won three MVPs, been to nine. There's Carson Wentz, who has not yet accomplished what Dak has, put a pin in him. Matt Ryan, who's won a league MVP, been to a Super Bowl. Big Ben, who's been to three Super Bowls. And there's one more that I'm forgetting. Oh, Aaron Rodgers, who's been to one Super Bowl and won two or three league MVPs. So everyone that's making 30-plus million, aside from Carson Wentz, has accomplished enormous amounts. The Carson Wentz contract is based on what you think and his talent is, his draft position, and how good he was 2 years ago. And even that one, you can say, yeah, that one's a risk, but we'll see what Philly thinks about it. But these examples of, look at these teams that paid these middling quarterbacks this much money.
Kirk Cousins, the Vikings aren't a good team?
Well, since they are a good team. They then gave Kirk Cousins $28 million, and we'll see if that ends up working out for them. They were a great team the year before they got Kirk
Cousins. So you think those contracts are holding those teams back?
Absolutely, yes, I do. 100%. I think the Lions signing Matt Stafford to that deal is one of the reasons they've never been competitive. I think the Niners are going to see, unless Jimmy Garoppolo is way better.
So what about the money they paid Calvin Johnson before that? Did that hurt their ability?
Or? No, because paying the guy who is the best in the league money, that is where you get your value.
You have to pay the best player on your team.
Sure, and Calvin Johnson was that. Absolutely right.
And who is it right now?
For the Lions?
Yes.
Right now is probably Matt Stafford. Okay, but that doesn't – so you can be the best player on your team and still overpaid to the degree that it hurts you. Like, I don't think anyone would look at the Lions and say, okay, that 30 – that
every team has overpaid players.
Yes.
And to me, I'm never going to complain about guys getting the market value. And those guys are examples of guys that are playing regardless of what you think their team are. There's only 32 teams, mm-hmm. all right? And whatever the market is – Matthew Stafford got 27, and that's an old deal. Kirk Cousins, relatively new, and I believe that's a deal that helps set the market as far as what guys are going to get. He got all his money guaranteed. And if you think it's not going to have an effect on Dak getting his money, I've told you before, Sam Bradford, 20-something million. I mean, like, they're paying bad quarterbacks $20 million. Why wouldn't he want $30 million?
Right. No, I don't blame Dak for wanting it. And I understand that that's where the market is going. But that can be true, and this can also be true. Teams are making mistakes on some of these guys. We can use the graphic, and the graphic, I think we've updated it, to where I've always called it the Matt Ryan line, which is, are you around as good as Matt Ryan or better? If you are, then when you get paid, you can be worth that money, that second contract. If you're not, then those second contracts hurt your team's ability to compete.
So, like, guys in the NBA, they get a max deal. Mm-hmm. Are they they're the same as LeBron?
No.
Tobias Harris?
No, but the NBA, this is a little apples and oranges because the NBA is not hard capped. The NFL is. But I think a lot of people look at Tobias Harris as that's a deal that will not age well. Just like that when we saw Chris Paul's deal, we said that would not age well. I'm not begrudging Dak getting his money. I would like everyone to get as much money as possible. But as long as football's not baseball, and as long as the money paid to Dak is money you cannot pay elsewhere.
You have to overpay players. If not, you're going to lose them. That's why they signed DeMarcus Lawrence last year. Did they not overpay for him?
I think they did.
Yeah, there's a bunch of players that are overpaid.
We should just mention, don't forget what the Cowboys said. Among everything else that Jerry and Stephen Jones said, they will not set the market when it comes to new highs at each of these three positions. So let's wait and see what happens with the three then. But you think a deal gets done before the season starts?
Yes.
Okay. And coming up, has Antonio Brown played his last snap in the NFL? That is still ahead on First Things First.
Okay, quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. Obvious. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. So, to reduce costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, accessed from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. And you're improving efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/FTF. netsuite.com/FTF. netsuite.com/FTF.
Back here on First Things First, and we're joined by former All-Pro running back Brian Westbrook. Good morning, Brian.
Good morning.
Great to see you.
Doing well.
Bro, you lost some weight?
Hey, I'm trying to slim down.
Okay.
Trying to slim down. You know, sometimes the running backs, they get bigger after the career. I'm trying to reverse that. Trying to go the other way.
You look great, man. Good for you.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
Should we talk about the regiment? We'll do it. You know what? Let's do it after. Let's talk football first. In the commercial break, we'll do the workout. Aaron Rodgers is preparing for his 15th season with the Packers. Matt LaFleur is preparing for his first as the Packers head coach. Didn't take long for rumors to swirl about their already strained relationship. Rodgers wanted to set the record straight, said it is fake news. Unfortunately, the media, there's a lack of integrity, I think. And when you're in a really low news cycle, like in June and July, when there's not much football going on, that's the kind of stuff that comes out. We don't need to spend any more time talking about it because it's complete ridiculousness. Brian, what is your reaction to Rodgers' latest comments?
You know, actually, I agree with Aaron Rodgers. I came up in an era with Andy Reid when it was the media versus the team and the players. The media was trying to drive a wedge between the players and the coaches in the locker room, the players and the players in the locker room. And Andy would always say, it's us 53 versus the world, versus everyone. Mm-hmm. And so let's keep our stuff in-house. And I think this is a great example of there's not a lot going on. But what did you expect? When Aaron Rodgers, a future Hall of Famer, a Super Bowl caliber quarterback, one of the most talented guys in the league, and you're bringing a 39-year-old coach that hasn't shown the propensity to be a head coach, he has never been that yet. Mm-hmm. And so I think all these types of things, anytime Aaron Rodgers has a camera in front of his face every 2 days, as all starting quarterbacks do in the NFL, this is going to happen. I'm not going to like everything that my head coach wants to do.
Definitely
I'm not going to like. I certainly didn't like a lot of the things that Andy Reid wanted to do. He wanted to go live periods every single day. And every chance I had a camera in my face, I said, listen, I don't agree with it. I don't think it's right. And most of the players didn't agree with it. So what? Andy Reid didn't care. He still went live every single day. That's how he did his things. I don't think quarterbacks or players and head coaches have to agree on everything.
I think Rodgers, I don't love the fake news line, but aside from that, I think what he's saying is absolutely correct, is that because Aaron Rodgers has a history of tumultuous relationships, because a lot of us saw, wow, 39-year-old first-time head coach, 35-year-old future Hall of Famer quarterback, we saw that there could be conflict. There has been an element of, are we speaking it into existence? When Aaron Rodgers says, I don't like joint practices, is that a shot across the bow at the coach? Or is that just Aaron Rodgers saying, man, I don't like joint practices. No matter who my coach is, I don't like joint practices. We talked about the audible system. When both the coach and the quarterback seemed to really be on the same page about knowing this was going to be a work in progress, and the way a lot of those discussions were couched as, is this a disaster waiting to happen? And so I understand Rodgers' frustration. Some of it's his own doing, as far as we judge you based on your history, and he has a history of some touchy relationships, and some of it's his own doing because when he does talk in front of the media every couple days, like most quarterbacks do, he is a little more honest than most guys. He's less milquetoast. He's less just trying to get better today. He actually gives you what's on his mind, which gives us more ammunition to discuss what could actually be going on. But I don't blame him for being frustrated with this. I don't blame him for him saying, listen, maybe at some point we're going to have a conflict. And I'm certain there'll be a sideline blow up between coach quarterback, as there is with most guys at some point. But why is this being discussed as if it has already happened when it is not yet? Why are people seemingly waiting for us to have a bad relationship when we don't yet have a bad relationship?
It's always puzzling to me, just being in the league, how people aren't in the league, they would say things that would affect you. Why would Aaron Rodgers care that people are saying he doesn't or doesn't have a good relationship with the coach? Like, the relationship is developing, Brian. Like, it's going to happen over time. But Aaron Rodgers is very sensitive. He's got rabbit ears to everything. And Aaron's going to say what's on his mind. The joint practices, doesn't matter what the head coach said. Aaron is going to express himself. The thing about Aaron is that I have a slight issue with is there's certain things that Aaron could make better immediately by just saying one or two things. And typically, he decides to not do that.
Like what?
As far as the audible system. He could always say that it wouldn't be a problem compared to shutting down my brain, shutting down how many years I've been in the league. I don't believe that's the right thing to do. He didn't have to say that. Him and the coach can have plenty of disagreements in private. But publicly, you have to be able to put on the right face and say the right things because the left guard's listening. The defensive tackle's listening. Right. They're not going to get interviewed. And as you go forward as a team, it helps Aaron as a leader. And those are things I still think that Aaron is still learning, even at this age.
Face of the franchise. You never really want to go against your coach. Everyone knows who Aaron Rodgers is in the NFL, especially in Green Bay. And when you're the face of the franchise, you don't have to flex. You don't have to say, hey, I'm the face of the franchise. We don't want to do things that way. You can quietly, just like you mentioned, you can quietly go to the coach and say, hey, this probably isn't a good idea. We got five guys hurt doing this one drill. This doesn't make sense.
Great example.
Let's be smarter. And I think Aaron can quietly do that without having to say it in the media. And unfortunately, he continues to say it in the media.
But the reason that the media brings it up and the reason he's peppered with questions every time there's a scrum or a huddle is because he's just coming out of a relationship where he didn't get along that well with his head coach, where they definitely butt heads. Maybe it was blown out of proportion or not. So I think it's an extension of, you know, all eyes are super focused right now on whether it's going to work with a new first-year head coach or not.
Yeah, of course. And because of the coach they hired and because of the things that his lack of experience, because of his age, because it seemed like Rodgers and McCarthy went sideways at the end, even though they both deny it, even though they both right now say, no, we were fine. I think most people know that relationship had run its course.
So also the verbiage of denying it, and it really was a problem, with the verbiage of saying there's no right. problem now.
No, no, no. Which is why I said at the front end, some of this is Rodgers' own doing. But I don't blame him for being frustrated by it. I don't blame him for saying, for feeling like there is an element of, there is not a story here. And he is right about another thing. It is the time of the year. It's the time of the year where for a week we talk about how good of an AAU dad LeBron is. It's the time of the year where there's not a lot of big stories. And so what we discuss is the biggest names and what story there is associated with it. And so we weren't talking about Aaron Rodgers and his relationship with his head coach during OTAs because the NBA Finals were going on. So I do understand Rodgers' frustration, which is we haven't yet had a conflict and people are making there to be a conflict. That would be frustrating. Now, Chris's point of why let it bother you, Rodgers has always let this stuff. He's always said he tapes his media interviews. He listens to what people say.
Yeah.
He keeps score
of
these things.
So if you believe that, he always has a problem with this, you'd also believe he's going to have a problem in this relationship. Because his parents, his siblings, his teammates, he's had problems with. Last head coach, I can guarantee you this. If Aaron Rodgers goes into Ted Thompson and them tell him, hey, man, don't fire this guy. I want him here. He'd still be there. He's not, though. So Aaron Rodgers is the last one. His relationship with Brett Favre didn't start off great. I wonder why. Because almost everyone loves Brett Favre. Sometimes it is Aaron Rodgers.
Aaron Rodgers is a great player. I think Matt LaFleur can say something, too. He can step up and say, listen, not every player is going to like what we're going to do here. However, we're trying to change the culture. We're trying to do something different here in Green Bay. And Aaron Rodgers may not like it. And I'm not going to beef with Aaron Rodgers. I'm not going to have a problem with Aaron Rodgers if I'm Matt LaFleur. However, I want to set the tone a little bit differently than what has happened the last few years there in Green Bay.
All right, we've got to take a break. Brian, stick around. Coming up, is Antonio Brown about to retire in the prime of his career?
Oh, yeah.
That is next on First Things First. Back here with Brian Westbrook, Antonio Brown is off to what some might call a bit of a rocky start with the Raiders. The latest report has AB retiring if he's not allowed to wear the helmet of his choice, the one he wore in Pittsburgh, the one which is no longer NFL approved. So how is head coach John Gruden handling all this from AB? Well, take a listen.
I support this guy. You know, I think that's what needs to be said. I don't know what anybody's writing or what anybody thinks, but this foot injury wasn't his fault. You know, this was a total accident. It really wasn't his fault, and it's a serious injury. I know some people are smarting at it, but it's really not a laughing matter. The guy was hurt. He was innocent. He didn't do anything wrong, and the helmet thing is a personal matter to him. You know, he has a strong feeling about what he's worn on his head, and we're supporting him. We understand the league's position as well, so we're in a tough spot. And we hope Antonio is back here soon because he's exciting to be around. I'm excited. I got some plays for him. I hope we can start calling him.
We're all just laughing, thinking about what could be the most diva behavior you could get from a wide receiver. And I think we all are like,
this is this near the tops of the
this
list.
This one's pretty high. Brian, what do you make of what Antonio Brown's latest deal is with the helmet situation?
I think the situation is crazy, but I'll say this about John Gruden. He knows how to support his players, whether he believes it or not. He said, I'm riding with Antonio Brown. And as a player, you kind of appreciate that, no matter what's going on.
That don't mean you're going to win a lot of games.
That does not mean you're going to win a lot of games. However, you handed him a big check, and you said, I'm going to support him. So I can appreciate that. I think this situation is kind of crazy. Antonio Brown is going to get $30 million guaranteed on this contract. He's getting a bunch of money. We understand that. I think he's a special talent. I think this can't be the hill that he's going to die on, the hill that he's going to end his NFL career on. This just doesn't make any sense. I think, and I'll tell you, and I'll even go back a little bit further. As a player, I understand his feeling. Because I had two concussions the latter part of my NFL career in Philadelphia. I was forced to play with a helmet that I never played with. And I felt totally different. I didn't like the way it looked. I didn't like the way it felt. And as a player, a part of playing good is looking good as well. And so I think part of this is that for Antonio Brown. The other part is safety. If I'm the NFL, there's no way in the world that I'm going to allow a player, especially after all of the turmoil, after all the lawsuits with the concussion situation, to go out there and play with the helmet that hasn't been approved. It just doesn't make any sense. It's not right. And I think Antonio Brown, from my view, it's trying to take some pressure and the attention off of the feet by adding the helmet issue into the equation. This just doesn't make any sense at all.
Well, you mentioned something interesting there, which is how it looks. And so I want to ask you a quick question, C, because one of the things that has been reported is he thinks all of the new models, and there's like a dozen he could choose from, obscure his vision to some degree. There have also been reports saying he doesn't like how they look. He likes how the old one looks. And so given...
He can't prove the first one.
Correct.
And there's no other players complaining that it obstructs your vision.
So my question is, knowing what you know about catching footballs, playing that position, but also what you know about AB, what do you think is the bigger hang-up for him? How it looks or how it could potentially affect his play and his ability to catch football?
It has nothing to do with his ability to catch the football. It has zero to do with that. It's part of just trying to be defiant. And there are guys in sports, that being baseball, football, basketball, they fall in love with their equipment. But technology is going to outdate. I'm sure there's guys in Major League Baseball, they wanted a certain glove. But if that glove was banned, no different than the bat. They wanted a certain ounces, they wanted a certain length, all those types of things. But this is all for the player's safety. That helmet is obsolete. And the models that they have, the 10 choices that they have, are so very, very similar, but they're all safe and you can perform better in the helmet. It's just a matter of psyche, all right? I like this. I want to play with it. I think that it's better for me. All players are like that. Kids that come from Ohio State, typically we like to keep our pads that we get measured for, that being helmet and shoulder pads, once you get into the pros. It took me a number of years before I transitioned out of my college shoulder pads, which were a lot wider and got the little small shells so guys couldn't hold me off the line of scrimmage. Eventually, my helmet went through several changes, but yes, I do understand players, yes, as far as equipment, shoes and everything. Just like we used to wear the old Field Generals from Nike. Mm-hmm. You know what? Guys start getting turf toes. Guys start having surgery. They made those shoes. You know, you can't play in these shoes anymore because we have the technology that makes them safer.
I think it's important to mention, and you brought this up also, the league came back with not, oh, you can't wear that. Here are 12 other, I think, even helmets that are approved that are safe that you can wear that are similar to yours. Number two, the one that you're wearing now, the Schutt or whatever it's called, It was discontinued in 2011. It has now been that many years since they've even made a model just like that. So it is definitely clearly outdated. And number three, this has been months now that he was given these options that he had to change a helmet. It's not like it happened on Friday, oh, by the way, you have to change your helmet.
Well, this is the
he
thing
has known about
I think
this.
It's important. A number of key things, Jenna. The manufacturer, Schutt, who makes that helmet. I had a deal with Schutt, and Schutt outfitted the whole football team in St. Thomas. That's how good their technology is, cutting edge. Now, the NFL, they're not going to just use one manufacturer. So, Schutt, they don't make that helmet anymore, but they make several others that are very, very close to it. And one of the problems with skilled guys, that being wide receivers, quarterbacks, we like a helmet that's lighter. Mm-hmm. If you're playing in the trenches and you're playing linebacker, you're playing running back, you need a heavier, more rugged helmet than wide receivers. But there's so many different models. But Shutt is not even making that model because technology, and there's 2,100 players in training camp, Brian, all of them are in compliance except AB.
The one thing, and I mentioned at the beginning, John Gruden supporting his players. I think it's a bigger thing for John Gruden at this point. John Gruden needs to step in and say, listen, we don't need any more attention here. The one thing we need attention on is winning football. And right now, we're not playing winning football. We can't play winning football without you, Antonio Brown. We need you to focus solely on football. Get healthy. Be able to get back and help us win football games. I don't need to hear your name in the media talking about helmets and all these things. We need you to help us win football games. That's the most important thing. Right now, he isn't helping his team.
But Gruden's put himself in this spot. Gruden, once he got there, made the choice. We can't pay Khalil Mack. We're going to ship him out. Mm-hmm. He made the choice. We think Amari Cooper is more valuable via draft capital than paying him. Those are not only one extraordinary player and one very good player, but two great citizens, both gone. He then made the choice to bring in Richie Incognito, Vontaze Burfict, and Antonio Brown. And given the fact that AB is now to the point to where he is trying to smuggle an old helmet hand-painted onto the field, knowing what we know about Richie Incognito and Vontaze Burfict, if you were to say the three most volatile or the three, for lack of a better term, craziest guys in the NFL.
Last 5 years.
Right. What are your top three draft picks? They're all not only on the Raiders, but guys, Gruden, he didn't inherit them.
No.
He went out and said, come join us. Come join us. Come join us. And in a year for Derek Carr, that could determine whether he's the quarterback of the Raiders when they go to Vegas. When a year for Mike Mayock, who leaves the television booth to come run a football team. And for Gruden, who's trying to prove in year two that he's worth some of that 10-year, $100 million deal. AB is the best player on their team. We all know that. We all recognize that. And for AB to be doing this, it's not, you said at the beginning, diva. It is diva, but it's also just overwhelmingly selfish and overwhelmingly immature.
That's
and,
what a diva is. We don't care about the rest of them 10 guys. Man, I need my money. Man, I need the football. It's all about being selfish. That's how they created the nickname. It wasn't hyperbole. It wasn't like we didn't deserve it. Through the years, we have deserved it, and this right here lines up with one of your teammates, T.O., is one of the most devious things ever. And I just know this. Being a member of the Hall of Fame, and I know it wasn't right, I watched the Hall of Fame keep T.O. out a couple years because of why? Stuff like this, Brian. And I know that A.B. is not thinking about that. But T.O. shed the he shed light on the template, which they don't like. Putting up great numbers year after year after year, which A.B. has done. And then they decided, you know something? We're going to control when you're going to get into the Hall of Fame.
Rothy's are the everyday flats for life on the go. They're stylish, comfortable, and they go with everything from yoga pants to dresses and skirts. They've quickly become a must-loved, gotta-have-them brand thanks to their wide range of colors and patterns, with new ones launching constantly. And there's a zero break-in period. Since Rothy's are crafted using 3D knitting techniques and hand assembly, their seamless design means right-out-of-the-box comfort. Best of all, they're made from recycled plastic water bottles. That's right. Over 25 million water bottles have been diverted from landfills to make these gorgeous and sustainable shoes. Another major bonus, they're fully machine washable, so your pair will be fresh and ready every laundry day. Plus, Rothy's always come with free shipping and free returns and exchanges. There is no risk and no reason not to try. You'll quickly discover why BuzzFeed called them their forever shoes. Check out all the amazing styles available right now at rothys.com/cadence. Comfort, style, sustainability, these are the shoes you've been waiting for. Head to rothys.com, that's rothys.com/cadence today. WWE SmackDown moving to Fox on October 4th. We are thrilled to welcome Kofi Kingston to the show and to the Fox Sports family. Kofi, we had Triple H on before WrestleMania, so we're ecstatic now to have you, the WWE champion, join us live from Toronto following SummerSlam. Thanks for getting up and hanging out with
us. Yeah, of course. Thank you guys for being on the show. But we got to do the intro right. It's not just the WWE champion. It's your WWE World Heavyweight Champion. You know, we got to put some sauce on
right.
it. You're
right. I wasn't breathy enough, Kofi. I wasn't breathy
enough. All good.
We're gonna get that right.
It gives me an excuse to say it, so it's all good. It's all good.
All right, so Kofi, you took on Randy Orton last night. You retained the title via double count out. What stood out for you at SummerSlam?
You know what? Being in Toronto, it's an amazing energy. We've been here for 4 days, TakeOver, SummerSlam last night, Raw tonight, and then SmackDown tomorrow. Like, Toronto has such a rich wrestling history, so anytime we come here, like, the energy is just off the charts, and we as performers, we love that. The energy, that's the thing that stands out the most to me. I just love being here.
All right, Kofi, you retained your belt last night, so now what's next for you as the, I can't do it like you did it, but WWE World Heavyweight Champion. What's next for you?
Yeah. Well, what's next is, like you had mentioned earlier, it was a double count out, you know? So for me and Randy Orton, we have like a tremendous history. For those who don't know, I'll give you the Cliff Notes version. About 10 years ago when I was a youngin on the come up, I was on my way to the top, you know, to the main event scene, and Randy Orton actually went out of his way to make sure that I never ever got there. And it actually ended up taking me 11 years to actually even have a match for the WWE Championship title, which I was fortunate enough to win at WrestleMania this past year. So being able to do that, I've been able to meet great people, you know, travel the world, influence a lot of great people. I've gone to Ghana, the place where I was born. I went back for the first time in 26 years with the WWE Championship to be able to provide a sense of motivation and inspiration. Randy Orton didn't want any of that for me. So last night, it was great to be able to go toe-to-toe for me being the WWE Champion, being somewhere where he never wanted me to be, but a little bit unsatisfying for me that it ended in a double countout. You know, I want the pin. I want it to be definitive. So the good news for WWE fans is the fact that this rivalry is going to continue. You know, it's not over for me, not for a long shot. So the next thing is getting some true get back on Randy Orton.
All right, Kofi, here it comes with the sauce, baby, for the new WWE champion. I'm going to give you a chance, baby, to travel back in time. I'm a little older than my co-host and you, so I've been a wrestling fan for a long time, bruh. Can you give it to me? You can fight against any of the other former champions. Which one would you face, and what kind of special match would it be?
That's a lot to ask. I mean, myself, always growing up, I was a Ricky the Dragon Steamboat guy. So he was the man. A lot of the things that he did, he was always breathing fire. He wore these loud colors. He did high-flying moves and martial arts. I was really big into kung fu movies. I'm an 80s baby, you know? So all that, Ninja Turtles, you know what I'm saying? You know, Street Fighter II on video games, Mortal Kombat, all that kind of stuff. Ricky the Dragon Steamboat kind of did all that in real life, you know? So between him or Shawn Michaels, even Rey Mysterio Jr., I have so many. I could literally go on and name everybody that was an influence on my life and even, like, my wrestling career. The fact that I'm even here is because of all of those people in any kind of match. I'm not greedy, you know? If I was able to be able to get in the ring with any of these guys, it would be great. So whatever the match might be, I would take it.
Kofi, you literally named everyone from every era of wrestling ever, which is a great way to answer the question. Some breaking news we should mention. On October 4th at Staples Center, it will not only be the first ever SmackDown event on Fox, we are thrilled to announce that it'll also mark the 20th anniversary celebration of SmackDown. It's going to be a big event. Some superstars already set to appear include Kurt Angle, Lita, Mick Foley, Booker T, Hulk Hogan, Trish Stratus, Goldberg, Jerry Lawler, Mark Henry, Ric Flair, Sting, and that's just to name a couple. So, Kofi, as the WWE champion.
I love it.
Whoa, I love it. How exciting. How exciting.
The sauce almost is real. Yeah.
That was legit. So, that was real.
Yeah, that was it. I could feel it. I can feel it. I can feel the energy. That's what I'm all about, is that power of positivity. And I know you guys are rocking it, seriously. But I'm really excited, and WWE is excited to be a part of this team, you know, to be a member of the family along, you know, MLB and the NFL. I think it's going to be a really, really good fit. A lot of people are, like, super excited. I've had the chance to meet with some of the executives from Fox, and everybody is excited to make this huge. This is like a huge thing for us as performers, as WWE superstars. We are super duper excited for, you know, for all of it. Like the energy, like, you know what I'm saying? Like even you guys, like doing the introduction, you know what I'm saying? Just now, like the energy is there. I feel like this is something that was meant to be, and I'm so happy that I can be a part of it for sure.
Take you to a more serious, you talked about going back to Ghana. Hadn't been back there since a childhood. Now this experience, tell me, what emotion was able to come back through reliving your childhood? All of our childhoods shape us, but tell them what your childhood there and how it's carried off into your life today.
It was amazing and incredible just to be able to go back. I feel like everything happens for a reason. My mom wanted me to go back to Ghana after I graduated from college, wanted me, myself, and my brother and sister to go. And I was just like, oh, well, I got to fill out my resume and I got to, you know, chase the job and climb this corporate ladder. And I missed out on going back. And so I had been back in 1994 when I went to go. Like, my family is huge over there. I got to meet my grandparents for the first time, you know, aunts, uncles, cousins, all my family is over there. So for me to go back this year of all years, the president of Ghana declared this year to be the year of return when he invited all of the members of the Ghanaian and African diaspora to go back and be reacclimated and refamiliarized with the motherland. Like, it just so happened to be the year that I won the WWE Championship. It was just, and I get like goosebumps even thinking about being able to have that kind of an impact, to go to Ghana and sit at a school and sit amongst the children and show them that on the WWE title is a Ghanaian name. Like, Kofi is a unique name over here in the States, but over in Ghana, it's the name given to a boy born on Friday. So it's like Mike over there or a John, such a common name over there. So for me to be able to show the most prestigious prize in all of wrestling, that anything is possible if you believe in yourself, no matter where you come from. You know, I take a lot of pride in being someone that people can look up to. People that look like me can look at the screen and see me doing great things and then themselves go out and do great things. And my story has been one of struggle. So anybody from any background can identify with my journey. I take a lot of pride in being able to inspire people and motivate people to go out and just chase their dreams, man, and just do incredible things with life. Because at the end of the day, like, that's what it's all about. We only get one life, and we got to make it count.
That is true. What a fantastic experience. What a great experience for you. Yeah, wait, okay, awesome. So before you go, you always come down with a new day, tossing pancakes into the crowd. Please tell us the story there.
Yes. Oh, boy, and none of it is going to make sense. You know, myself, Woods, and E, we come out and we're all about crowd participation and having fun, and that's what you get when you come to a WWE show, is you get to be almost included in the show. As far as the pancakes are concerned, one time myself and Big E had a lumberjack match, which is a match where you have all the members of the roster surround the ring. We were facing Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens, and anytime someone gets thrown out of the ring, it's the job of the lumberjacks to throw the people back into the ring and, you know, continue the business in there. Now, Xavier was actually one of the lumberjacks, but he's also part of our team. So he was the chief lumberjack. So what do lumberjacks wear? They wear flannel. He had his flannel vest on. He had his lumberjack hat. And what do lumberjacks eat? They eat pancakes. So he brought out a whole tray of pancakes. And before we knew it, the whole match, the entire arena is chanting, "We want pancakes," you know? So we threw out pancakes to everybody. And then the next week, we went up to Vince and we're like, "Hey, last week people wanted pancakes. Do you mind if we bring out pancakes again?" And he's like, "Oh, well, I mean, do you wanna?" We're like, "Yeah, it'd be cool if we did that." And now fast forward, you know, a year and some change later, pancake power is a real thing. People are clamoring for pancakes. They make signs, they cut out holes in them, and they say, "Pancake me." They put their faces through them, and I just throw them out to them, and that's where we're at, you know? Like I said, it doesn't make sense, but we give the people what they want. And at the time right now, they want pancakes, so we got to give it to them.
I didn't realize that video was on loop. I literally thought you took 35,000 pancakes out of your belt and threw it at the crowd. That is a great story.
Oh, yeah.
Look, the takeaway is that you are having so much fun. You absolutely love what you do. We could feel your energy. It's palpable. Kofi, thank you so much for joining us today.
Right on. Thank you, and thank you for having me on the show. And a big thanks to you, Chris Carter, because you won me many a Madden championship with your reliable hands. So I appreciate being able to thank
That's
you
what
on
I'm
a
talking
personal
about,
level.
Baby.
This is huge for me.
That's why I come with the flavor, man. You know I'm the only one on this show got some flavor. Look at this.
Easy,
come on.
Easy.
Thank you, Kofi. Congrats, man.
And make sure you at home check out the 20th anniversary celebration on our first ever SmackDown event on October 4th on Fox. Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.